you given some more thought into this non-blocking? I mean, maybe you can give it some more thought if you're not into this non-blocking right curve and how easy or complicated it is to actually get an approximation. Maybe I don't understand this very well, but so a write is always a hit. It's not a miss at all. I think we can, okay, so. Okay, what is this curve telling us? Can we revisit the goal of this curve? Okay. This non-blocking write rate curve, what does it have on the y-axis?
On the y-axis would have memory size. It's just like an MRC, right? It would have memory size, and then the I mean, the y-axis, you can do a couple of things. You can do, for instance, the percentage of writes that were non-blocking.
Mm.
You can do the percentage of all misses that were non-blocking. And the idea is that as you increase the memory, the benefit of a non-blocking write will go down, just like the cache, right? I mean, the miss rate curve. As you increase the memory size, the misses will decrease.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So we could have a regular MRC and then a modified MRC, I guess. Is that which you call the non-block? No, that's not the non-blocking write curve. That's a miss rate curve when non-blocking writes are considered hits. I'm just wondering, how do we do a comparison here? This non-blocking write curve, as you describe it, only seems to tell you in absolute terms what is the number of non-blocking writes, or actually it will tell you a percentage of writes that are non-blocking.
Exactly.
But if you do a percentage of all accesses that are non-blocking, including reads and writes, that
probably will give you a better picture.
That will give you a partial information, because you don't know what is the percentage of all axes that are misses in the first place. So I'm just wondering how we can capture that information.
I see. So what you're saying is that we could have very little misses, and if you have full benefits of non-blocking right on there, then it doesn't matter.
Right. I'm saying, for instance, if your non-blocking writes is 2%, right, in the lowest cache level, and the total number of misses is 98%, then I don't know if non-blocking writes helps all that much.
Okay.
Because the
I was saying it's the other way around. I was saying that you have 100% of non-blocking writes. Mm-hmm. I mean, all misses can be handled as non-blocking writes, but the total misses is only 1%.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, even then, the non-blocking writes doesn't help that much, maybe, because the misses are not that important.
So it's true. So in the non-blocking write rate curve, that information is me. I mean, it's saying, okay, out of all misses we have, this is how the non-blocking write rate varies with the size of the memory, but it doesn't say, how much of those misses are.
Right. Instead, if we were to do a regular miss rate curve and also show a miss rate curve where non-blocking writes become hits and non-blocking reads become hits, I think that would complete the picture.
Mm.
So both are miss rate curves, and then the gap between these two miss rate curves is the benefit.
Okay.
We're just talking about clarifying the non-blocking write rate curve a little bit more. Ratio curve. So Daniel is here, and Hector is not coming, I'm assuming?
No.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So Ricardo, what are your thoughts here? Do you think that you would want to explore this further?
Yeah, I guess I could create that figure and see how it looks from the start.
I think Daniel would need to give you the traces.
Okay.
All the traces that we used in the figure 4, I guess. I don't know which figure it is.
So one thing we can start is with the MRC itself, right?
Yeah.
I like the idea that you just mentioned, that to calculate the gap between the MRC and, the additional heat that we would have from non-blocking
guys. Yeah. Yeah, I, th- I think that would complete the picture, at least for me, because then I will know how important the improvements are or how significant the improvements
are.
Okay.
No, but that still has the problem of the time, right? I think we still have a problem.
The problem of the time?
You mean the fetch of the page?
What I'm saying is that after a while, I mean, let's say that you do a lot of non-blocking writes on a page, but after some time, that page in asynchronous mode, that page will be fetched to memory. So if we continue counting those as non-blocking writes, we will overestimate the benefit of non-blocking writes. Right?
Yes.
So we need, I don't know if that happens with lazy, by the way, because in lazy you don't do the fetch unless you absolutely need it.
Wait, hold on. Actually, no, we won't overestimate it. Because I think we are comparing it against the regular miss rate curve. Will we overestimate that?
No, I don't think so.
No, I have to think more deeply about this because... So, Lewis, what you're saying is that... Well, in fact, the interesting thing here is that this, let's say we have a series of writes.
Okay.
And we are constructing the regular MRC.
Yeah.
The first access will be a miss, let's say. It's not in the cache. But the second onwards will be hits for the regular MRC simulation.
Yeah.
For the non-blocking write simulation, the first one will be a hit and everything else will be a hit as well.
Yeah, true.
Both until eviction.
Until eviction, yeah. And the non-blocking write would continue to be hits even after eviction if it's a write.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the point of showing that then?
What?
What's the point of showing that?
What is the point
of... Every size, it's always a hit.
Well, you have misses on reads.
Reads, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that's why it's important to do a total miss rate curve for reads and writes. Otherwise, if we do a non-blocking write ratio, I guess everything is a hit. Is that what you're saying, Ricardo?
Yep.
No misses.
That's the point.
But, that's why we need to bring in reads as well. Otherwise, it doesn't make much sense.
And that would be good because that will answer actually the question of what happened with those writes that are preceded by reads.
Mm-hmm.
Those will not take advantage of non-blocking writes. So in that difference between the two miss rate curves, those will not be counted. Because even in the regular case, there will be hits.
Correct. That's right.
Wait, but something I don't get is that now the system with and without non-blocking writes, in terms of reads, is it not the same?
It's not
misses
the same.
Misses are still misses.
Well, there are some read from patches that will be hits in case of non-blocking writes, but those will be hits.
No, I'm talking about the simulation now that we are proposing.
Yes. Yeah, I'm talking about the simulation as well.
That simulator must have some knowledge of
about
patches.
What is in the patches and patch memory, and so that it can simulate and
read
from patches. It's a little bit complicated, Ricardo. So, but I guess it's much more than creating a simple MRC using Madsen's stack algorithm.
Yeah,
it needs additional bookkeeping and checks.
I'm thinking if it's not just easier to run a full real non-blocking write simulation and run it every time for a different cache size.
You mean an actual implementation?
Or yeah, it would be an actual implementation, yeah.
Or...
Well, it doesn't have to be in the kernel, that's why I'm saying it's a trace replayer kind of simulator.
Yeah, the implementation cannot be easily converted into a simulator because it's fairly complex, right?
I know.
I think we have a better chance of getting it done quickly if we start from the MRC simulator and add these additional capabilities to it.
Okay.
But that's just my estimate. Because the non-blocking writes code, I mean, it's fairly complicated to convert that into a simulator.
But that's what we're trying to do now. And even more, trying to make it fit into the MRC, to the Mattson algorithm.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that it won't be like the full capability, full implementation of non-blocking writes that we need to do. Right, I mean, you don't need to maintain data, that's one. You don't need to worry about interrupt context handling and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the non-blocking write version of the simulator will be the same as the original one, but every write will be a hit, and the reads that before were misses could be a hit if they are to addresses and sizes of recent writes.
Correct.
So you will have to keep this knowledge of recent patches somehow. Right. But apart from that particular point, it should be fairly the same.
Yeah. There's no requirement for, we don't need to worry about times, right? I guess no. We don't need to worry about the time at which the fetch completes and things like that.
Why not?
Because if it doesn't complete, for the case of reads, you have read from patches. And if it does complete, then you have a hit. So both should be the same.
But, I mean, you can read something that is not in patches. Right?
Yeah, I guess that's one case. If a read comes to something that was not a patch, then
the
it fetch, does matter.
And the fetch completed or not does matter. Yeah, true. I think that's the detail. So we could create...
Well, if we were going to work on lazy, then we forget about that particular case.
Yeah.
That's actually...
Yeah, so the lazy MRC is much easier, is what you're saying, than the other two.
Yeah, I think the lazy MRC would be easier because you don't have a fetch happening in the background, but happens whenever there's a read of something that,
Agreed. So lazy MRC can be constructed fairly easily. Yes.
One other thing, another detail. On lazy, writes will not count as a space use on the cache.
Hmm.
I mean, you can just write more.
Hmm.
So the it will fit more in memory before triggering an eviction, which is something to take care of. We took care of that by imposing a limit on patch memory, so we can reserve that space of the cache as patch and assume the other space and not count any write.
Correct. So that's the other detail, which is that although writes are hits always, you need to eventually fill the cache. You need to get a page and use the cache. Or use one position in the cache, except for lazy.
Yes.
So there are some detailed, interesting things here. And it would be nice. I'm curious about MRCs that do this stuff. Because in the end, I think we'll know the real value of non-blocking writes only when we start looking at these MRCs. Because right now we have some estimate We have a couple, at least one workload where we have hit miss information, but that's for a single memory point in the memory size space. It's not clear how non-blocking writes scales when you go pull memory higher or lower, and these misread curves actually really help with that. And it would be a nice thing to have, if we don't have it for the final version of the paper, it would be nice to have it in the future, in a presentation or in a future version of this paper. I think it's worth doing, is what I'm saying. Maybe not immediately. It's probably not in the top of my priority list, but it's certainly important.
So what's the plan then? So should I get these traces in the block address space and start working with just MRCs, and then we can all think about how to implement the algorithm for start adding more non-blocking trace details? Or
I guess it all depends on how much time you have, Ricardo, whether you want to do this or not. I think
I guess just at least a part of constructing MRCs that should be fine. The least I can do is write simple. Be able to run a simple MRC and give anybody of you the code running with one trace, one of the FIU machines, and then you can continue from there. That I can do definitely.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. So Daniel, why don't you send Ricardo one of the traces and see whether he can create an MRC out of it.
Sure.
Because these are not block traces, so you have to do more to get to the point where you can create an MRC, even if you have a code that does that.
I'll send him an email. Even though I think Hector uploaded them to the repository, so probably I'll send
a pointer to him. Last time I was playing with Mammoth, so I think I have an account on Mammoth.
Okay.
So if I can reach those traces from Mammoth, or maybe they're there, or mounted somewhere inside Mammoth,
sure,
that would be ideal, I guess, because I was planning to do this inside Mammoth.
They are in Scarface. The credentials are the same as when you were here, so you could always go to a Scarface.
Okay.
Why don't you send Ricardo some information about how we can get the traces?
Sure.
Okay, I think it's worth doing this. If we get it for the paper and we find that the results are interesting, we should certainly include it. Okay, so... Right. Now, let's talk about the document that you sent out, Daniel. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. Can you tell us quickly what?
Well, basically, it has two sections. One with things that we plan to expand on, and the second one will be with things that were misunderstood that we want to clarify, and then just have a note for that we will address all the editorial comments. So, in the first section, we have 3 points. The first one is Figure 4. We want to expand on it. I mentioned there that we have these partial data of which writes are misses for a subset of the workloads. I don't know if we should mention it, but I did mention it. I just took a extract of the reviews and then what we think to do about it. That's the format.
Yeah, I think that... I think that first of all, I mean, this seems to promise a lot more than we could potentially deliver. The first sentence that say we will address these comments by extending our explanation of Figure 4. I think if you stop there, I'm fine. But then you also say, and including some new data about how many of the partial writes were actual misses in the cache. I don't know if we can do that for all the traces, because this sentence suggests that.
The following one is that we do have it just for a subset, but Sure, I can.
I think it's better to be clear. And instead of saying we plan to, I think you should just say we will.
Okay.
Right? And but at the same time, if you have something that you're not sure about, you should be explicit and say that if there is time, we will provide this information. Then the next point is, I think this is, you know, you have the right idea here. Just, it's a matter of writing. Maybe you can do another pass and then I can make sure that we don't promise anything that we can't deliver. The second point here is the persistent memory. And again, yeah, you should say we will work on fixing the writing related to persistent memory. And elaborate further to clarify the assertions. Yeah, because it doesn't say short, vague, and unfounded assertions. But which ones are those? They haven't said it, so it's just like speculation right now. We don't know which ones, but we'll try to address it. We will address it. But, okay. The next point then is the orphan patches and the copy on write. Okay, so we are going to investigate and confirm this if this problem exists on copy on write file system and create appropriate fix. I don't think we should say that.
Okay.
I think we should say, I don't think they even expect us to do that. I think we will discuss it in the paper that we've further details upon investigation of the copy on write file system and how non-blocking writes applies. If we do this, fix the issue, that's great. And you can say that we did that. But I think it's they're not asking for it and we don't have to promise to fix it.
Sure.
Yeah. So Ricardo and Louis, please jump in whenever you have something to say.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So then the next set of things is related to the misunderstandings, right? So, have we addressed all the major things up here that we actually have to address? Yeah?
I'm not sure. I can read everything again, but...
What did we discuss last time were the key ones? There was this... the copy and write was one, and then...
Journaling.
The journaling, yeah, but that's a misunderstanding, yeah. And then the figure 4. Figure
yes.
4 and this and...
People saying about the kernel being too old. And
the kernel being too old. Yeah, that's not a misunderstanding. So it should probably be up here.
Yeah,
and
I same
think
less...
How do we address that comment?
Not
to say anything about it. Okay, let's leave it at that. Unless the shepherd says, oh, you need to address this thing, then we go back and think about it. How do we address that thing, though? If the shepherd says...
Some of them ask if it took 3 years. I mean, it took 3 years.
I guess it took 3 years, but most of the time was spent doing the disassembly work, right? Which we are not including in this paper at all.
I wonder how is having a newer kernel important?
There was this person that said that newer kernel... It was referring to this mechanism for which the kernel throttles processes that are creating dirty pages. And it said that it could even be worse in newer kernels, the way that we interpose on this mechanism. That's one thing that they mentioned related to that. The rest of the reviewers just mentioned it as something weird, but they didn't point out or anything. One of them actually said that it shouldn't matter.
Well, I don't know. I mean, again, this falls in the category of things that can be fixed, right? You just have to, I mean, yes, with non-blocking writes, you don't have that capability anymore, but you can create one.
Yeah.
You just have to do a little bit more things to make that happen, right? It's true that we break some new functionality that showed up in some recent kernel, but it's not unbreakable. It's not unfixable. Sorry. Right, can fix it. I think that's the response we need to have if a comment like that shows up at the talk.
Another thing, I don't think you moved to a newer kernel, right? And the one I was
No, I just moved to a newer minor revision of the same kernel.
I see. Okay. But, well, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't look that important to me.
Yeah, we should just ignore it until someone asks us the question either at the conference or at the talk. I don't think they'll ask this sort of stuff at the end of the talk.
Either way, today...
It's just like, I mean, why didn't you implement that in FreeBSD? Or, I mean, it's not important. The point is that I don't think we depend on anything about Linux. We can implement this on any kernel, so... Doesn't matter.
That's a good point. I think we should, you know, that should also be part of an answer that talks about Linux kernel version. We should say that, well, this is not just about Linux, it's about other operating systems too, which basically do the same thing. It's a more fundamental design decision that we are improving, or let's say providing a solution for. Okay.
Well, there was this person that mentioned about the background and foreground threads, and that if the main difference between them was to handle metadata. If why shouldn't we spawn more than one thread, multiple threads? Or try to handle metadata asynchronous too.
Hmm. I think the answer there is we are using the Linux thread infrastructure anyway that is supposedly designed to have the optimal number of threads to do a bunch of work, right? So why would we recreate something that is already meant to solve the problem?
That's true. Should we?
Yeah, I think we should address that. For some reason, I mean, this response seems a little bit too short for the number of comments we got. That was my first reaction to this document. And I think it is perfectly fine to have more things in there. When I said high level, I might have indicated that maybe we should have every comment, but I think... And I still believe that, but I think this is still fairly short. There were some substantial comments there which we should provide a response for. Even if it says things like, oh, you know, this was a misunderstanding and we'll clarify it in the paper, right? And I think that should be the general tone of the response as well, that we, if there is something that we don't agree with in the reviewer comment, we should, instead of saying that, oh, that's wrong, we had to say that, okay, this was a misunderstanding and here's the right way to think about it and we'll clarify this in the paper.
Okay, I did not do that for the misunderstandings. I just put whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I was implying that we would clarify, extend that explanation in the paper.
Right.
I don't know if that was the appropriate tone, though.
So here, for instance, we will investigate to confirm our understanding of the system. So initially you say we believe that non-blocking writes would work as expected, but then after that you say we will investigate further, which is a little bit confusing for the shepherd, right? What it is that you really think. So I think we just have to maybe look at our response very carefully and make sure there are no inconsistencies and that we are not promising too much. I mean, overall, I think you have a good list of comments. It's just a matter of doing another pass and fixing the language, which I can help with. So let me go to the comments for the misunderstanding. So first one is EXT3 and EXT4 journaling functionality along non-blocking writes. I think you have to say a little bit more about what that means for the shepherd to understand what is the concern you're trying to address. So expand on that bullet, I would say, to specify exactly the concern. The second one is, okay, by the way, what is that concern again? I completely forgot.
That metadata commits could happen before the data was flushed.
Oh yeah, that's fairly, it's a fairly significant concern, right?
It was brought by two reviews.
Yeah, we should expand on that. Maybe we need two bullets if there are two independent concerns.
Each of them just use one talk about EXT3, the other one talk about EXT4.
But it's the same concern.
Basically talking about the same.
Yeah. And the other thing which I think you should annotate here is beside each bullet, you have to say reviewer numbers. So reviewer A and reviewer B have this concern, right? We need to have that so that the shepherd can cross-reference this stuff against the reviews. They'll want to do that. They want to make sure that, you know, if you've addressed this comment from this reviewer or not. And so we need to provide enough information there. So we need to expand on this. For NBW lazy, can't tell how page fetch is eventually scheduled. So I think this is... So what is the concern there? The main concern is...
That the reviewer understood that the page got locked on the on the write operation. So for lazy, on every write you will lock the page, and then since the page is locked, other mechanisms like fsyncs or mmap, they wouldn't be able to access that page because it was locked.
I think you say it right. We have to clarify this further in the paper because we say somewhere that page locking is the one that is the mechanism that we used for consistency, right?
Yes, with lazy that was not true. We actually believe we had to expand that on the rebuttal on OSDI.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing. So somehow we missed that completely in the review. Okay, so right, so I think we need to expand on this as well a little bit. The performance of non-blocking write. A non-blocking I/O is expected to be worse than blocking I/O when workload is 4 kilobyte plus fsync under ordered mode journaling. Why is that?
I don't know why the special part. But in my answer applies, which is when you have a full overwrite, we don't do anything particular. Which will be the same performance.
Shouldn't we do better?
No. Both of them will fully overwrite. It will.
No, I think Daniel has some graphs about that, right?
Yeah.
No, basically, when you have a full overwrite, you don't fetch, so non-blocking writes and blocking writes will do the same. Just overwrite the page.
Yeah. So what is this? Now I'm lost again with this comment. This comment doesn't make sense then. It's just a misunderstanding.
I think what he's saying is that, if I understand correctly, right, in the blocking case, you don't have any extra, you don't use any extra CPU to do anything else.
Yeah.
He's thinking that with non-blocking writes, you are going to use a little bit extra CPU to manage patches and things like that. That's my guess, right? So because you use that extra CPU, then your performance should go down. I think that's the idea.
Yeah, I mean, we have a branch there, but that's it. An if.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, Daniel has some graphs. I remember that he made some graphs where he varies the size of the
The file bench evaluation shows at the end what happens at 4K and everything. Yes.
And I think it was the same as blocking, isn't that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the point, right?
So shouldn't we point to the figure as well? Say that the figure, I think that would be a good thing to add in. And, so I think it would be good for you to, we don't need to respond now, today. because we already sent in a response to the shepherd saying that we are alive and we know about this, right? So I think it would be good to spend more time making this response document more comprehensive, make sure that we don't miss any significant comment, and also tag each of the comments with reviewer IDs, because multiple reviews may have the same comment.
Yes. Well.
So I think it...
Especially for Figure 4, I'm coalescing their three reviewers.
I think spending time with this planning stage will also help us with our own revision, so that we make sure that we cover everything.
Sure.
So Ricardo and Lewis, with your reading of the reviews, do you see anything that we significant that we are missing?
I haven't had the chance to read the reviews, actually.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, maybe just one dumb comment, very simple one, about a little bit about the wording of the response.
Okay.
But I guess you said you were going to handle.
No, but go ahead and tell us what you're thinking.
It's very quick, just removing the part about we are planning to blah blah, just that.
Yeah. So we will, you're saying we will address.
Yeah.
We will, yeah, exactly. Instead of plan to, yes. Let me see, don't worry about the colors mean something to me. So I'm looking at my notes here. Yeah, so this stuff we've already...
Yes, that's already the journal. Right?
So here is the thing about, are we addressing all of these details in our misunderstanding section? The dirty page thresholds. I think we should address that not in the misunderstanding, but in the.
Yes, that part we.
Yeah, we need to add that. Okay. Yeah, I think we need to add that and say that we will talk about, we'll clarify our position in the paper on this and say what we think. Right, it's a new mechanism, so any existing mechanisms would have to be. Altered to work with non-blocking writes. Yeah, it's the same thing here.
Yeah, he actually first mentioned that it was in place on Linux, and then he made the point that in newer should be a more comprehensive mechanism.
Yeah, so here, workload should be run for much longer than 60 seconds because page flushing happened at 30 seconds. It is not expected we do new experiments. That's something that is typical for shepherding. First of all, I guess the question is whether we should be talking about this comment at all. And I don't see how we can talk about this comment without saying something that doesn't help much. So this is the comment, Lewis and Ricardo, about why run for only 60 seconds. You should be running file bench for much longer. Because page flushing happens every 30 seconds. Did you clear the OS page cache after the file bench file creation phase and before the run phase, or just before running file bench in its entirety? So I think this falls into the category of evaluation clarifications.
Yes, there were many persons.
So it's not just editorial. It's also evaluation details and experimental details. And maybe you can create one section about experimental details that we'll plan.
I thought that file bench ran longer than that.
It did. We had to change it to make it at 60 seconds.
It actually ran 60 seconds. We changed it to run in 15 seconds, and then I changed it back to 60.
No, I thought it ran for 5 minutes. No?
I'm not sure right now.
I think the default time is for 5 minute experiments with file bench. Maybe wrong. But this is, if it's default, then we don't even have to answer this question.
Yeah, I'm not sure now. Or maybe it doesn't have a default. Because I think you need to tell.
Yeah, so in a section where you talk about you know, editorial, we will clarify the edit, we will address the, sorry, not the editorial, but the experiment section. You should list a set of comments in that section to say, we will clarify all of these, right? Provide details about experimental setup. Why is the sequential read performance of your SSD so bad? Is it so bad? Is it, it is nearly indistinguishable from the performance of your hard disk drive. How can we answer that question? Why is it bad? For that, we'll have to know, I guess, the internals of the SSD FTL, right? Can we answer that question in any other way?
Not sure. One thing that that SSD has, though, is that it's really small. And it was very populated. It was like a 90% utilization, 95% utilization.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that is affecting something, but I don't know.
Yeah, but the read performance shouldn't be affected because of that SSD. Was that right? Maybe because we have garbage collection being triggered more frequently. So in the sensitivity to memory size, showing normalized results obscures the behavior. Presenting absolute numbers in some way would be preferable. So I think we need to address this.
Yeah, they had some, I believe those results had some hiccups. Hard to speak.
Okay.
When not normalized.
When they are not normalized.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't remember. Right. Correct.
I see. But shouldn't they also show up when...
And I also think that part of the problem is that they were very wide.
The variance.
Yes.
Yeah. The ranges are different.
Because the thing is that... I remember now. I think one of the reasons why we normalize is that we have different graphs using the same ranges.
Mm.
So for some workloads, using the actual values will be all coalescing in the x-axis because they were too slow, the random workloads compared to the sequential workloads, the number of items.
If we keep the y range the same across all the plots.
Yes, that's what we were doing because of space. We will put the y range on the first graph, and then all of them will have the same.
That's not a good enough excuse, though.
So normalize...
Yeah, that's not a good enough excuse, unfortunately. Unfortunately, they're not as familiar as the Microsoft I/O traces. I don't know where that is coming from. Do we have any Microsoft I/O traces?
No.
I don't know where this guy is coming from. I think because we refer to the SNIA IOTA repository, which has FIU and Microsoft and some other stuff.
But I think Hector did a survey of those, and I don't know if he saw anything coming from Microsoft that would be a file system load. So maybe he's referring to block level traces.
Probably. So, yeah, it's just... Yeah, I don't think we need to address this comment, but the previous ones about the evaluation, I think we need to. The sequential read performance of your SSD so bad. I think we don't have an answer for this. We can just say that we don't have an answer why the sequential read performance is so bad. But it is that. The normalized stuff, I don't have a good response for that yet. If we cannot answer a certain comment...
Wouldn't the shepherd ask for something that we leave out if necessary?
Yeah, that's his job to do that. So we can leave this out, but the stuff that we do want to address, we should include in the response. Because the more stuff we show that we're going to do, the less concerned he will be. So yeah. So I think we should make this more substantial. Yeah, so for instance, in the presentation and editorial part, you should include things like that, like the comments about the writing, this stuff.
Yes.
So do we have information about variance? We have all the data, right?
I think so.
But to get variance with 3 points, it's somewhat weird. So it doesn't say that you should do this. It just says that you're expecting that you will do it. Now the question is, what do we want to do? What was the network in the SFS benchmark? So all these are experimental details that we need to say that we're going to add.
Yes.
Figure 9 should consider using different y-axis to enable seeing the differences in the random execution.
That's same issue. The previous image was not normalized, but they will use the same y-axis to share all of them.
Yeah.
So sequential will have higher numbers than random.
So figure 9. So figure 9 says figure 9 should consider using different y-axis.
So we have 5.
So it's not normal. So then he's saying that do not normalize. Is that what he's saying?
I mean, we have figure 9, which is not normalized.
Yeah.
And they all share
the y-axis.
I have figure 10.
Yeah.
So are we speaking again at some point?
Do you have any comments that we should use to improve the response to the shepherd?
What I can do is that, because I haven't read the reviews yet, I just read the summary from Daniel, and I thought it was kind of fine, but maybe there are some another comments on the reviews that I missed. So I may make a pass on the reviews if I see something interesting and let you know.
Okay. Sure. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks. Bye.
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 Right. So the third review is pretty small, right? The reviewer C. It's not much. There's not much, a whole lot of comments here. So here, this stuff right here. Do we have that addressed in the response document? So this is, I think this is related to one of the comments that you have up here.
That's your own thing.
It's where is it? Here, this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, it's better to put the actual comment in the response document so the reviewer can actually know which one we are talking about. Again, this one is...
I think most of this is because they are thinking on synchronous writes. Non-blocking write applied to synchronous writes. They're not decoupling the part of the fetch with the part of the write to the file system.
I think that needs to, whatever you just said now, should show up in the response section. Exactly the way you said it. CPU overhead. I don't think we need to address this. It just says I'm curious about. bit because that would require us to generate more data, run more experiments,
mm-hmm.
correct? We can't do that. 4 kilobyte. Yeah, this you already address. I think this stuff, this is the experiment stuff.
Yeah, this is also complaining about SSD.
Yeah, I think we should include this as well in the response. What is the size of files? This is experiment data again. Okay, good. So D then is worst case micro benchmark that repeatedly writes to a small portion of a page. Is that the worst case for us? Repeatedly writes to us. Why would that be the worst case?
Well, it generates a lot of patches, but that's...
But I think you need to say that we have patch merging. At most, the total amount of space used by patches would be a page. Right? And then sufficient to overwrite. I think we should say this in the response document. One of the main issues...
Yeah, he's actually asking of, at the moment of applying the patches, you will have to apply all of those, but no, that's not true. We have merging, so we apply just the most recent.
Yeah.
That's what it's referring to.
This may end up being future work, but I suspect there are some likely optimization. Which ranges? We already do this. We already have this optimization, and we talk about it, don't we? Yeah, so I think we should say that should be under misunderstanding. I don't think we need to address that. The jitter. What is jitter? Okay, here's the part that I didn't understand at all when I was reading. Do you understand what this whole thing about top half and jitter means?
Oh, it's referring to applying the patches and in the completion handler,
mm-hmm.
but in the interrupt
context.
So if you have applications that are being interrupted for long interrupts,
mm-hmm.
then they will have this jitter that they always talk in supercomputing,
mm-hmm.
when you have different threads at once. Or
so what do we do? Do we do in the...
We put it in the bottom half.
In the bottom half.
And he actually says that he understood, he just... wishes that we would say before.
Okay, yeah, we will do that. Presentation stuff, right? So presentation, we need to again include this in the response document and say that these are the things that we will clarify. Don't seem fundamental. So the only actual issue is the metadata stuff. Is there a reason? We do have a reason. And this is again clarification, right? Clarification of writing. So we need to have this in the talk about this in the response document. I'm not saying that we have to address each of these. This could be in a section where we say these are clarifications that we will, additional clarifications we'll provide. Right, so we have a section of misunderstandings, there is a section of editorial comments, there's a section of experiments, and there is a section of further elaboration. I don't know if that the further elaboration falls into this category as well. Maybe those go in here. Yeah. I agree. So the first section. My understanding is that there is another mutex that you can use instead of creating your own. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Can the inode mutex not also protect the patch queue? It's a pretty direct question. So we have to address this direct question.
That doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm.
That a mutex will protect the whole. You will have a mutex on the file. Then how do you have concurrent access on a file? Unless you don't have concurrent access on a file.
Against concurrent write. Maybe it is. Is there a way to open a file with exclusive write access?
That could be, but that would be a special flag. But I don't think the rights are protected with the inode lock. I believe metadata should be protected with the inode lock. But if the whole file was protected with the inode lock, why then you have locks per page?
The whole file.
Yeah, because the inode will be for the whole file. And our patch queues per page.
But maybe this is also a page level lock.
Well, the inode lock should be
should be for the whole file, you're right.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and we do have that lock because.
So then the when you say can inode mutex not use to protect the patch queue, I guess the answer is no, because we need to protect per page patch queues and not patch queues for the entire file. So that's how we need to address that. We do need to address this comment. Because the direct question.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, number E. Is this really such a problem? The first question merits over a dozen lines. The evaluation doesn't include any non-benchmark app. Not true. We have non-benchmark application. Doesn't include any? What? Doesn't include any non-benchmark? Yeah, it does. I mean, the MobiBench traces are non-benchmark. Right? So, this is not true. So, we shouldn't bring this up at all. That's saying that you said something wrong or something that is not true. Reads and writes that are simultaneously issued by different. Yeah, so it seems very debatable.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. He's saying reads and writes that are simultaneously issued by different threads without any application level ordering. And then he says that is very debatable because they could use mutex to synchronize IO. So, I mean, that's application level only.
Yeah, I think this goes into clarification. We need to
the whole question, I don't understand.
I think the whole question seems to indicate that there is some application level ordering that imposes patch ordering.
Yeah, but I mean, we said that if there is no application level ordering, then they can be reordered without loss of correctness.
Yeah.
That's what we said. And then he says that that's very debatable because threads could use mutex to synchronize IO accesses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
exactly what we're saying. Ordering.
Exactly.
Then what does he say? However, in 3.5.1, you describe a patch queue which ensures global order. The only non-determinacy is among writes from different threads or processes.
Exactly. I mean, I don't see what he's trying to say.
Yeah, I think we have to respond to this to say that, to say what we think, without going too deeply trying to read his comment, saying that we do the right thing. Along those lines, but it's a comment that we need to address, because it seems like if someone who, let's say the shepherd, doesn't know all these details, he's going to wonder why we are not addressing something that seems fundamental, right? This is a writing thing. Yeah, which we do have up there. Okay. Seems quite a stretch to speculate about applicability to byte addressables to it. Yeah, we'll write, we'll clarify what we mean, right? I think that's the response. Ordering of steps in figures 1, 2, and 8, easy to miss, making them quite unhelpful until the reader discovers this.
Those are the state diagrams that have write, fetch, and number.
Okay.
So it seems he missed the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
On the arrows.
There are numbers on the arrows?
There. You have the first step will be 1, 1 will be the write, then 2 will be check on the page.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
You remember those
that
we have from
Lazy? Okay.
He missed the number somehow.
Maybe we should, Yeah, I think he's the only one who missed that. The very end, so I don't think it is important. Very end of section 4, hand wavy explanation of how you avoid using non-blocking writes for metadata pages. Forward reference to the detailed explanation at the beginning of 5.2 would help. Forward reference to, yeah, we'll do that.
Excuse me, guys, I have to leave the call.
Okay, no problem, Ricardo. If you have something, please write to us to say, okay, why don't we handle this comment this way?
Sure, sounds
good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Kernel version 4 years old. There is a reference to VG, but before you're defined, okay, it's a writing issue. Right? Then we need to fix the writing issues. Please label the 4 graphs in figure 11. What's the problem with the labels? Are we not labeling them?
Sure. I mean, the thing is, they don't have labels. But 4 graphs, if he's talking about figure 11, has to be the spec SFS graph.
Mm.
So remember that we have 4 configurations. There are no labels, but each bar says the percentage. So, I mean, we could put read mostly, write mostly, only reads, only writes. But from the legend of the x-axis, you can also get that.
So we can make things more clear.
Mm.
And it's easy to do.
I guess we can put read mostly, write mostly, only writes, only reads. And those were the 4 configurations for spec SFS.
So let's do that. I think we can make some people happy. See, the thing is that a lot of these reviewers will actually read the final version of the paper. And some of them will see if their comments have been addressed in the final version of the paper or not. Right? And they'll, you know, but not a lot of people do that, but some of them do that. So it's better to address whatever we can. Figure 4 shows that a very high fraction of writes are overwrites rather than new file creation. This is worth some more explanation, perhaps citation of prior work to help convince those of us who believe without much evidence that most writes are have to be new file creation.
I don't know where he's getting that from.
I know that old Harvard NFS Trace work looked at overwrites and would be cited by anything modern. So is there a paper that says overwrites versus non-overwrites, the NFS Harvard Trace work? And I think he has a valid point, which is that if we are arguing that has changed, it would be worth pointing out to the previous work which had different findings.
I don't see that way, though. I mean, we just have traces and we are describing what the traces are. In our traces, we have lots of overwrites.
But it is also true that a lot of people, I mean, according to this guy, do believe most of the writes are new file creations and not as many overwrites. And they believe that because of some prior work. So I think it's worth saying something along the lines that, you know, we found significant number of writes which are overwrites, unlike the findings of some previous work or something like that. I don't know if he should say that or not.
I have it coalesced here either way, just... The figure 4 shows that a very high fraction of writes are overwrites rather than new file creation.
Yeah.
This is where some more explanation. Equalize it with the other figure four comments.
Fine, then it's okay. And let's just leave it as it is. Okay, yeah. This is a nice guy. Most people, he's apologizing at the end.
Yeah, I think he was the accept, actually.
He was the accept? Yeah.
So, I mean, we had only one accept.
And this guy had lots and lots of comments, right?
Yes, he was the most negative guy.
Most negative guy.
The first one had a lot of comments, but he seemed to have knowledge of Linux. That's the reason why he didn't like the paper.
Who?
This guy.
Who didn't have knowledge of Linux?
No, I mean, the first one had a lot of comments,
yeah.
And he seemed to have a lot of knowledge of Linux.
Yeah, this guy doesn't.
This guy seems like a regular guy.
Regular guy
like
who didn't really like the paper, and he had a whole bunch of comments, right?
The first one is talking about figure four again.
Hmm.
He's just saying that he doesn't have any idea of how much of those rights are actually will benefit from non-blocking rights.
Hmm.
And he didn't like the numbers, so it seems they don't match with something that...
With the spec SFS.
No, I mean the numbers of smaller than 4K writes doesn't match with some study that he did.
Yeah.
And he said that probably is because we're including sockets.
I think I know this guy. This guy likes to do his own sort of mini research and to confirm it. If he has data that matches what is being reported. I know who this guy is. Exactly. Yeah, I know who this guy is.
Well, he brought the point. I don't know if that I mentioned. I don't think that I mentioned.
Which one?
But he brought a point of having figure 4 including writes to sockets and other non-real files.
Hmm.
Which we don't, because
we
only
don't
trace
that information.
I mean, we are only tracing XT4 and CFS, so we're doing the right thing. He was saying that we
might be
including writes to sockets, and that's why we had so many under 4K writes.
Yeah, I think we should bring this up and say that we are only addressing files and not sockets. And see, this is the kind of stuff that the shepherd is going to pick on, right? So we need to have these four categories and put comments, and wherever responses are necessary, we need to add responses to. Since biter-disabled persistent memory is one of the most compelling justifications.
He's asking for simulation, evaluation, or something.
What simulation?
I mean, he was asking for some evaluation for the biter-disabled persistent memory idea.
Yeah, that we don't have to worry about. Why was the work done on what can only be described ancient? Yes. Okay. Do we need to address this? Probably not.
It was brought by half of them.
Like three reviewers brought that up. And we don't have a good enough answer here. Let's not address it then. If we don't have a good response, what can we do? I mean, it's all done. We can't go re-implement it again.
I mean, we can... I guess we could say that we started with that kind of... Because we started a long time ago. I don't know if that is a bad thing to say.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing to say. And we can also say things like... I mean, we examined the recent version of the kernel and non-blocking rights. Yeah, we can say this. This is a clarification. We should say this. I agree. Seems to make assumptions that are not always true. Copy and write file system. Okay, so we do talk about this, right?
Yes. Then the next point is why we replay on a machine instead of an Android, but the replayer was for a machine. And we didn't have no rights on an Android, so...
Can we address this?
The whole MobiBench package came with a replayer for x86. I'm not even sure if you can replay it on Android, for starters.
Yeah. I don't know how we can respond to this, except to say that we didn't have a replayer for Android. And that's why we
have non-blocking rights on Android either.
We don't have non-blocking rights for Android either. So what do we do? I think we have to ignore this comment, unfortunately. But this may show up on a talk question. It's kind of too low level and nasty in some sense. But I think we have to be ready with a response in either case. Why we believe it's still valid. 60 seconds, remarkably short benchmarking time. Is there evidence that a reasonable steady state was reached? Do we have any evidence that the transactions per second are stable?
No, they're actually not
stable. They're not stable?
Because part of the thing is that FastBench does as soon as it can. Issues rise as soon as it can, so eventually your batch memory fills up.
But what about vanilla? Is vanilla stable?
I think so.
So then we should say that we found that 60 seconds was sufficient to reach steady state. And
for vanilla though?
For the benchmark, because the benchmark is designed for vanilla, right?
No, but I mean, our solution after a certain amount of time just rolls back to the vanilla on FileBench.
I see what you mean. So which means that, I mean, the steady state is not necessarily reached for non-blocking writes.
Yeah, no, we're not reaching this.
Hmm.
And that's to expect. If you're doing as soon as you can write, eventually you fill up memory and you have to go to the base of the disk, which is the base that vanilla is showing.
Okay, so how do you address this comment? If this is the default benchmarking time for FileBench, then we have a simple answer.
I'm not sure if the default, because I remember seeing the workload description for FileBench leaved out the last line, which where you say run with so many seconds. You had to add that.
So you can't run FileBench. When you download FileBench, you cannot execute it as is.
I don't think so. You need to say how many seconds. But I'm not sure though.
Let's check that.
But I mean, we cannot. I don't think we can say anything more than we didn't have a benchmark which will simulate think time. So, in something that does not have any kind of throttling, eventually you will.
We have the MobiBench traces which simulate. Does it simulate think time?
I'm not sure. I think
so. Is it timing accurate or not?
Think so.
Let's find that out to be sure, because these are the kinds of questions you might have in your talk, right? So we need to be ready with all the information. This is a particularly difficult comment, I think, to address. So we need to think more. Let's start by finding out what the default FileBench runtime is.
I mean, we can also give the other reason why it's only 60 seconds. Because we took so many measurements of many data points that I took for taking, drawing those graphs would take days. So, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if it's a good reason, but that's one reason.
Yeah, but the latter question is the real problem. which is the steady state question. The reason that you are giving is kind of it's more of an excuse than it is.
Yeah.
Hey, Kalei. Sorry, I haven't left yet. Yeah, I'm planning to leave. I should be done in another 10 minutes, and then I'll call you. I'll call you when I leave. Yes. Thank you. Yeah, bye.
He actually, if you read these paragraphs, goes more on in deep of problems with file page, which I think we knew about them.
Such as?
The lack of think time. The second part is actually what we're doing.
Now, wait, I don't think I quite understand this comment.
We're actually counting raw operations per second.
Is it because you're counting raw operations per second? So that writing finder in 12 bytes twice gives a benefit of 8 system calls. Yeah. Yeah, but that's what... I think we clarified that in the paper, right?
Yeah, we did that.
So why is he asking, is it because you're doing this? I guess... but the previous question is...
He says that
the metric being used is misleading. But it's explained pretty well, right? I mean, if you want, you don't have to be misled, right?
But, the number of... I operations per second, how can you say that in a different way? Number of operations per second, they were actually that number of operations per second, because they were smaller, they were many more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see how you could see it in a different way.
You mean, why does he say it's misleading?
Yes, if we were talking about throughput, then
it would
be a different thing, but operations per second is exactly that.
Yeah. Why does the number of operations per second increase under non-blocking writes? Does it increase? Increase with what? Per second?
He's talking about sequential writes, and it does. Because the thing is that when you go to 512, on sequential writes, vanilla on the first write will block to fetch the page.
Hmm.
It will replace the first 512 bytes. And then for the next 7 512, because it's sequential, it will do really quick. And then it will go on the same pattern for the next page. For vanilla, for non-blocking writes, we do everything without waiting, and we actually merge them in just one page. So that's really
good. So why does the number of operations increase? Because each operation is smaller. But the size of the operations are smaller. I think we have to address this comment by saying that. But he answers the same question himself, right?
Yes. He just said that it's misleading, the metric that we use, but I don't see it misleading. Each number of operation per second, so that's exactly what it means.
Mm-hmm. Finally, in the sequential write case, why is there any significant variance at all? Because you have different... Assuming that file bin sequential write test does the obvious and standard thing, should have no effect because there's no read, modify, write cycle.
No,
there's no read, modify, write. Actually, this is a misunderstanding, right?
Yes, I mean, we
create
the
files,
but we always drop the caches before creating it. I mean, it creates, drop the caches, and then we profile bench.
Hmm.
So it will be a read, modify, write. I think he's thinking that it will be always will be a hit because it just got created.
No, but it's,
no,
zero,
it's actually
length
a zero
file.
Set. No, it's not a zero line. It's pre-created.
File bench pre-creates the files.
I do understand that. I'm not quite sure, but I believe so.
Let's find out. I think we need to address this.
the way that we do it is that it will reuse the file that was created, but I don't know on the first run if we'll pre-create it or we'll just write it.
So we had to say that it used pre-existing files. I think
that's what
the response to the response to this comment, and we have to respond to it. None of the tests seem to consider think time, which is the largest benefit. The question that the paper leaves completely given a workload that is heavy on unaligned writes. So here, none of the tests seem to consider think time. We need to address this to first find out if the replayer is timing accurate. And if so, then we have to say that there is this test which considers think time, right? The given a workload that is heavy on unaligned writes and contains a lot of think time, how faster will it run?
And spec SFS also. I mean, you set a load per second and he will just issue as many as per second.
Good point. Yeah, so spec SFS at least has think time, potentially think time.
I believe that load will include that think time.
Yeah. How much faster will it run under? The closest we come is the latency graphs in figure 11 and 12, which implies under...
Oh, that's... Spec SFS
that won't help much unless the application actually has a way to use the reduced latency, which is a question that the paper leaves unanswered. That is true, except for the Mobi bench. The latency is used because there's a human person doing Facebook and Twitter. That's how you use the latency, because that person gets better responsiveness, right? Or doesn't consider think time. Oh, I see. Yeah, so this is something I need to think about. Maybe we can answer this by saying we'll discuss this issue in the paper.
Which issue?
Which is future work. This issue of think time. Issue of how non-blocking writes affects systems which are interactive and have think time. We could answer it qualitatively, not with more experiments. But you can see that we'll discuss this issue in more detail in the paper.
As future work.
As future work. As an area of future work, yeah. Many grammatical errors, okay. So this is the editorial part, right?
Yeah, it's just dramatic. No, not necessary at all. It's editorial, though.
How is 10% of that a stress?
I didn't get that.
I think he's asking why didn't you stress the system? I think here the point was...
No, but I don't see the 5,000 words coming from.
I think he's looking at the file bench results. Something like that.
That's file bench, yes. Spec SFS is figure 11.
Yeah, I know, but he's saying your SSD can actually do 5,000 operations per second, but you only configured 500... a target load of 500 operations per second, and that won't stress the device. I think that's the point he's trying to make.
Well, those 500 operations per second included network latency, network. I mean, because we're 500 NFS operations on a client, then the server will have to do whatever it has.
Yeah, so there is a network latency, and does the network become the bottleneck at 500 as opposed to 5,000? We don't know.
I remember that 1,000, the benchmark would report that it would do less than what it was requested. It couldn't keep up.
Yeah. Motivation much clearer, in particular in describing when there's sufficient blind rights. That's the main comment
we
had.
That's a figure 4.
The author here, be prepared to answer questions in this area. How many partial writes are to pages which had just been written? And then he stopped writing at that point.
Oh, that's
That's the comment.
A comment.
Yeah, yeah. It's a comment, which is basically a summary of the discussion at the PC meeting.
So everyone was talking about Figure 4, I guess.
Yeah. Talking about Figure 4. But this last guy has a lot of interesting comments, which can really help the paper if we make an effort to address as many of them as we can. And I think we should do that. I think it's worth spending a good amount of time writing. Now that we know that the paper is accepted, it's even more critical that we do our best with the writing. Because once it gets published, we can't change it.
Okay.
For papers that get rejected, you can keep changing them until you get accepted. But here, we are on dangerous territory, actually. Because it got accepted, we have to be really careful with the final version. Because once it's gone, and we can't take it back.
Okay.
Is that an
yes.
iWatch? iWatch?
No, an Android.
An Android watch. Okay.
Yeah, but right now it's useless.
It's useless.
Because I broke my phone.
Oh, yeah, Hector told me that.
Yeah.
You dropped it and it broke.
No, I didn't drop it. I mean, I believe it had... I'm not even sure if I just put it out of my pocket and it was already...
Broken.
Yes. But it was particularly interesting broken. This is my previous one.
Uh-huh.
Which it was broken. This one...
And it still works?
It was... This one felt and all the screen cracked.
Uh-huh.
But inside, it works. And all the touchscreen and everything responds. With my Nexus, what happened was the complete opposite. If you see it like this, power off, it looks completely perfect. But when you power it on, the screen will just throw garbage and the touchscreen won't respond. So it's like it got broken from inside. The pressure probably broken inside, but the glass is perfect. So at the end I called Google.
Yeah.
Because I read that people that got it from Google, they actually give them a new phone the first time.
Yeah.
For free without, even if you break it, they change it for you. But I got it from T-Mobile, so I called them just to see if they could do something. They said no. But they passed me to the LG people, which is the manufacturer. And they said that I should send it to them. I already did. And depending on the technician, they will say if charge me or not. Because since it's not broken, the glass, it could be just a manufacturer defect. So they might repair it for free. If not, they said between 50 and 150 is to replace the screen, which is less than buying the new phone, right?
Yeah, of course. Much, much less.
The
you buy
phone
a new
is
phone,
350 right now.
The same phone, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you want to get it fixed for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it cost up to now just $20 to send
I finally got the iPhone after several years of Android experience.
Why you changed to the dark side?
The problem is that with my Android experience initially was pretty good, but maybe it was because I had a very old Android phone. Because I used it for 4+ years, I think. It would, for instance, not make phone calls. So when I click call, the screen would freeze and nothing would happen. And then the only solution is to restart the phone.
Okay.
And I think the main problem is that there is no software update. So,
okay.
If there is a bug, you're basically stuck with that bug. And I had the same problem over and over and over again.
That was your previous one?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that you could have overcome if you liked Android just by getting a Nexus. Because
yeah.
the thing is that you have Android works in many manufacturers, Samsung, LG, whatever. And each manufacturer is in charge of getting the new Android and releasing the update.
They don't.
Many of them, they don't for all devices.
Yeah.
If you get a Nexus, though,
yeah.
Nexus is supported by Google. So that's the only one that it keeps
that
with
you
them.
That you keep getting the update.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
so that's the one that I have, and it has updated already twice, and it's the first one to get updates. Right now, if you get another Android, you will get the older
yeah.
version. So
yeah.
that's
the but
particular
I think
device.
In the end, for me, it was just about, well, I need a phone that can make phone calls. That's the most important thing. And
Sure. And I mean, I think for you, probably it's better because you live in this world.
And iTunes, and I'm used to that, right? For me, the most important thing is when I pick up my phone, I should be able to make a phone call. And I spoke to people who had iPhones, and they said, you know, no matter, some of them had old iPhones, and they said they've never had that problem.
Sure.
So I said, okay, yeah, that's the phone I'm getting.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, any Android is not the best thing. Now, if you want to compare iPhone with the Nexus one, then I usually favor the Nexus. Because it's an Android supported by the people that does the software. So
I figured that if Apple is selling iPhones and that's the only big product they have, or one of the biggest products they have, they cannot mess up on that, on the software updates or anything. Whereas Nexus is like one thing, one small in the Android ecosystem, right? There's a whole bunch of other manufacturers. So they're not under as much pressure as Apple to do the right thing.
Well, I don't know. As I was telling you, Google has this thing that if you smash your phone, they'll give you a new one. So they're actually very good on,
they might,
on supporting
but the,
their products.
But the thing, what I'm saying is that I don't know if Google invests so much in the software maintenance for the Android as Apple does for the iPhone. I don't know.
Well, they are supporting a lot of devices, including this one. That's,
yeah.
This thing runs a mini Android. It's kind of cool, I mean.
Yeah.
But sure,
I think for me, I'm at a point where
usually
the device,
if you have a Mac and iMac and all of that,
the expected thing would be you have an iPhone. Like,
but if you don't have any other device, sometimes you get very limited by the experience of.
But the reality is, I don't actually connect my phone to the Mac and do stuff. I don't really do any of it. I mainly use it to make phone calls. That's what. And I guess I have too sophisticated a phone for that.
Yeah. Right now, I'm surviving because this phone is.
Do you want these annotations?
Yes, please.
You do.
And the color code.
What? The color coding. Yeah. Actually, the color coding is just that the green ones are the experiment stuff. The blue is the first category. And something like that. You can kind of figure it out.
Okay. Yeah. I was telling you that since I don't have phone, I just took this old one. But
yeah.
The funny thing is that I change careers, right? So right now my Nexus is on T-Mobile. This is Metro. So this actually doesn't have any line. I'm living out of the Wi-Fi.
But
the cool thing is that you basically, if you have Wi-Fi connection, you can do anything.
Oh, you can call? You can call too?
Yeah. Google have this thing called Hangout Dialer.
Oh.
So basically it does everything over Wi-Fi.
You can also do OneNudge.
Huh?
You can also use OneNudge.
I don't know.
OneNudge is the internet phone company, but you have to pay like.
Oh, no, this one is free. From the US, you can call on any number.
You just need a Wi-Fi connection.
Yes. So I've been living on that these last days.
And in FIU, you're fine, but on the road, it's a problem.
Yeah, on the road, it won't work. At home, I'm fine, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, every year it's harder to not have a phone.
Yeah.
When I received your email about the acceptance, for some reason, at that moment I was refreshing the inbox to see if I got an email on my laptop because I didn't have a phone.
Yeah.
So I managed to see it as if I had a phone, but if not,
maybe
I could have read it that day after.
I knew it on Friday itself, but I didn't want to tell you until I saw the accept decision in the hard CRT.
I kind of knew it, but worried about...
I didn't want to tell you who I'd gotten, and then for some crazy reason, they rejected the paper.
I actually got worried because of that, because I assumed, okay, if he's accepted, he should know by now, but he's rejected. Probably he's waiting to see how to tell me.
Yeah, I...